Place your order for Thursday, June 21. Welcome to our committee. I might just comment that I know there's been a lot of interest and a lot of work done on the whole concern about the restructuring of the energy situation, and I guess I have to admire the way people have been working together. I know you have some difficult decisions and difficult compromises to have to make in some ways. So I'm looking forward to your testimony today. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 3633A. Senator Beyer, where are you? Come on up. Representative Ackerman, why don't you come on up and join you if you'd like. And
could I point out?
Oh, yes, just one moment. Janet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out to members that what we distributed to your offices a short time ago with the green strip across the top has the -15 and -16 amendments and a hand-engrossed version so you can see how they appear in the bill. And at your place this morning is a revised fiscal impact statement, one for the 15s and one for the 16s.
Okay, those are available over on the side table too, right? Okay. And by the way, Senator Clarno is in a Ways and Means Committee meeting and will be available to us. We'll try to get her brief too before a vote. Senator Beyer, welcome to committee.
And thank you again, Chair, Senators, for the record, I am Lee Beyer, State Senator from Lane County. And what I'm here to present to you very briefly is the A-15 and A-16 amendments to House Bill 3633. And I should say that these amendments are the product of a work group composed of a coalition of energy folks that have been working on all of the siting and energy bills this session. They include both the technical staffs from the executive side of the state government, the PUC, the AG's office, and the Department of Energy. They also include representatives from industry and consumer groups, including the CUB, as well as various generators and industrial consumer groups. I can't tell you completely that there's a consensus here, but you have a couple of products. As you'll recall, the House bill, as it came to us from the other chamber, essentially delayed implementation of 1149, the restructuring bill, for 18 months. What both of these amendments do is create a hard delay of 3 months until March of 2002. They also address a problem that we've seen in terms of fear in the marketplace, people being afraid they'll be pushed out, and clarified what we talked about as a standard offer in 1149, clarified a cost of service, which is more of a pure regulatory term that PUCs are used to dealing with. What that means in terms is that whenever the door for restructuring comes open, that customers, all customers, will be guaranteed a regulated rate, just as they are right now, for at least 15 months beyond that. In fact, the language in both amendments that talks about that says that that rate will continue until or if it's removed by the PUC and their conditions that are set out for them. Both of those are consistent. The second, or the difference between the A-15s and the A-16 amendments basically are in the Section 7 of the bill. And essentially what Section 7 and A-16 does, and it is not, to be clear, not in 15, is that it allows a provision for the PUC to make a finding via a routine order by the end of this year in terms of continuing some protections beyond that if they determine that the marketplace is not adequate to support opening the doors. The issue on that really that I think you'll hear the industry people talk about is some fear that if you create that opportunity, you'll create an uncertainty in the marketplace, and the effect of that may be that you don't see the energy generation resources come online as quickly as people would like because of concerns by investors not being willing to invest. I'm going to let them sort of put that in front of you. They're probably in a much better place than I am to talk about that, but That's, I think, the essential differences between the two. Again, in summary, you've got a guaranteed rate for people who choose to stay in the system. You have guaranteed entry or exit and reentry, if you will, for those very, very large customers who choose after March 1st or a later date if you choose that. And so you have very good protections for consumers, and you have a hard delay of implementation of 1149 until March under both bills. So, Mr. Chair, that's it. It's about that simple in a nutshell, and I'd be happy to answer any questions at this time or later.
Okay. Any questions for Senator Beyer?
I might later, but I'd like to hear from the representative first.
Oh, okay. Is that okay? Senator Perioli, why don't you come on up, too? It's Representative Ackerman. Oh. Okay. If you want
to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Robert Ackerman. I am a state representative from District 39 in Eugene. I am an attorney, been practicing law since 1963. I was on the Citizens Utility Board as its first chair and served a four-year term. And during that period of time, became somewhat familiar with the electrical market in particular, as well as other activities that the public gave did during my term of service. I have some testimony which I have I will submit to you. I have some amendments which I'll also explain with respect to House Bill 3633. I could probably first, distribute these sort of one at a time, give the administrator copies of my testimony for your use. It's very short. Thank you. And I will summarize it and then also go through my proposed amendments. I have, my testimony is actually in a letter form that I directed to Senator Duncan last week. I think it's very, very simple, but I think it's very, very important with respect to the issues that you're facing here today. As you know, Senate Bill 1149, which was passed in last legislative session, provides that large commercial industrial ratepayers shall be allowed direct access to the unregulated wholesale market not later than October 1 of this year. The bill before you has various deferral provisions in, which of course I favor. And for reasons which I will state that later on in this presentation, I favor the longest possible deferral of direct access into the market. As you know, Senate Bill 1149 also established a public purpose fee equal to 3% of the total revenues collected by electric companies. And these funds will be utilized for a variety of conservation projects. And in addition, 1149 also allows the accumulation of $10 million per year for additional low-income electric bill payment assistance. Under the bill which is before you, House Bill 3633, the public purpose charge and low-income bill payment assistance funds are also deferred. It is my preference and my position that the public service fee should be reinstated as originally intended on October 1 of 2001 this year. I say that because as we get into a declining economy and we get into our unstable power markets, the need for conservation, the need for weatherization, the need for low-income electric payment assistance becomes more and more acute. And these ratepayers have had nothing to do with why we are deferring or delaying deregulation at this time. They are the victims of the market. And these are the people that should be protected by the reinstatement of the public service charge on October 1 of this year. I note that House Bill 3633 also contains, I believe, in Section 9, what I call a poison pill. And I think in Senator Beyer's amendments that he has requested that be stricken, if I read it real quickly. I also have an amendment that would take that out. The poison pill is just basically allowing the utilities to charge back to the ratepayers through a PUC process any cost of the delay or deferral of deregulation. Once again, these are market forces that are in existence, and the poison pill provision virtually dictates an outcome which would be favorable to the electric companies if deregulation is deferred. Once again, the persons that will pay this bill are the ratepayers, and they are the ones who should be the beneficiaries of our action and should not be penalized by this poison pill provision. I also have another amendment, which I'll explain later on, which provides that if you keep the poison pill provision in and you keep the hard delay on the public service fee, that savings to the utility companies and not imposing that fee would be deducted from any costs that they would be awarded as a result of the delay of deregulation. Basically, I'll hand my amendments up one at a time and give just a brief explanation of what they are. The A14s are the ones which will retain the public service fee regardless of the length of deferral. The A11 amendments that delete the poison pill provision. And I'll hand those up at this time. And the A13 is the one which, if the poison pill provision stays in, would allow a deduction from those, from any award to the utility companies of the savings resulting from the delay of the imposition of the public service fee. I'd like to take this opportunity just to discuss a few points regarding the deferral situation. What we really have seen is not a real testing of the so-called deregulated market as a result of the California situation and the drought conditions, which have forced the BPA rates up so substantially. We hear stories from California, but we really don't know what an Oregon situation would be. I have a very informative letter from a person that was attempting to broker power for Polk and Talbot in the Oregon deregulated market, and I'm going to pass this letter on to you as an exhibit. Basically, what he was saying is that he has spoken to a number of energy suppliers on behalf of Polk and Talbot with respect to purchasing electricity in what would be our unregulated market if deregulation takes effect on October 1 of this year. Let me quote. He says, to illustrate, the best price we've been able to obtain is at least four times the cost of production, and that's only available if we want to purchase a five-year contract. The costs associated with shaping services, transmission, and distribution are in addition. This author, who is trying to broker power for one of our larger power users, basically contends that many manufacturing facilities would have to shut down if manufacturers and commercial users went to direct access as contemplated by 1149. He concludes that perhaps a 2 or 3 year deferral would be necessary in order for the competitive markets to, the wholesale market, to stabilize. I will pass this out as an exhibit and supplementation of my testimony. There has been some talk, recently that, and I think it is correct, that some of the wholesale rates have mitigated over the past several weeks. Let's not be misled. This is a result of a weather transition. In the Northwest, our weather has moderated. Our demand for heat, for example, has gone down. While in California, the full force of summer and air conditioning is not hit. The future market is still showing substantial increases in the cost of wholesale electricity. So even though we are in a temporary transition and have some mitigation of costs, the predictions are as soon as the hot weather hits California and the air conditioning goes on in the San Joaquin, Sacramento valleys, and in the L.A. Basin, it will be back up to extremely high electrical prices. It's my position at this time that direct access into the unregulated wholesale market would be an economic disaster to our commercial and large industrial rate payers for several reasons. As a letter from the representative from Polk & Talbot indicates, the unregulated market, if one goes direct access, is going to be four times cost of service. This basically means that either these increased costs are going to have to come out of profits, marginal companies and businesses are going to collapse, or they're going to have to, if they can, pass on these additional rate increases in terms of higher prices. What really bothers me is people like the local grocery store, the local merchant, the gas station, who might run an electric bill of $1,000 a month in the normal running of their business, and having them go direct access and having to pay $4,000 per month is probably not something a small business could handle. Likewise, for larger businesses, those rates would be extremely high. We also do not know under 1149 at this time what the consequences are if a customer does not go direct access. They are going to be given something called the standard offer, but we don't know how that relates to cost of service at this time. And until we can really define that, and until the cost of service becomes roughly equivalent to the wholesale market rates, deferral should be extended at least until those prices come into alignment. 1149 should not be used to create an artificial market which would cost our commercial and industrial users four times cost of service as apparent at this particular time. So based upon these considerations, I feel that two things should happen. The longest deferral period will give us the best opportunity to see if the wholesale markets straighten themselves out. The idea that the PUC could extend the deferral period, I think, is creative. It does provide for a soft landing. It probably puts that decision where it should be, and that is in the within the PUC authority rather than in the legislative assembly. I certainly feel that we need a longest period deferral possible in order to really understand whether the wholesale markets will come back into sync with the cost of service. And once again, I can't reiterate too strongly regarding the reimposition of the public service fee, public service charge to encourage conservation and encourage the purchase of non-renewable power as intended by 1149. So that basically concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions from you this morning. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Ackerman.
Yes, just one question, Representative. The dash 11, 13, and 14s are all yours, correct?
Yes, correct.
Okay. Because the I see that the dash 11 is included in the dash 15 and 16s also. Okay.
Would you mind just explaining your amendments again? Let's just take them each one.
Okay. 11 takes out the poison pill provision, but I think the amendments proposed by Senator does the same thing.
All right,
that's duplication. The 13 is probably moot if you take out the poison pill one, because what I was proposing there in 13 is if ratepayers have to pay for the delay, then you could subtract from that the savings of the utilities and not imposing the public service fee. So that could be moot.
Okay, so with 15 or 16, that's this particular.
That could be. Number 14 reinstates the public service fee effective October 1 of this year as intended by 1149. The bill before you did a deferral of that. That's why I spoke of our deferral.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Mesley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I'm not real clear. Maybe I couldn't hear you real well here.
I'm sorry.
Well, I think we're having trouble with the mic system, but I'm not clear if you included the public purpose part of it. How would you pay for that? Would that come from all the ratepayers?
Which is
your amendment dash A14? How would you pay for those?
What would happen would be the dash 14 amendment would just reestablish the public service fee, impose it on October 1 of 2001. It's a 3% fee which we charge to electric companies, and as originally intended by 1149. And who would pay that? It would be an extra charge. The ratepayers would pay that, but yet it would go for conservation purposes and the other purposes specified in 1149. Okay.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Clarification again. And that would be all ratepayers, public utilities, private and all?
No, it would not. It would only be, as I review 1149, it would only be those which are subject to 1149, which are investor-owned utilities, specific for and...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted that on the record.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
I might add, too, that those services that are provided by the public service fee would go to the ratepayers. I think 80% of the funds have to be used in the district served by those utilities. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Close, since this was your bill.
Yes, it was.
I'd like to refer to you now. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Duncan and members of the committee. I appreciate the fact that this bill is going forward. It was a great concern to my area. It was requested by the Albany Area Chamber of Commerce. However, I have faxed them the -15 and -16 amendments this morning, and they haven't had a lot of time to look at them, but they did send back a statement that I'd like to read to the committee. This is their statement. Both proposals miss the spirit and intent of the Albany Area Chamber, that being that energy deregulation be delayed for a minimum of 18 months to 2 years based on the premise of the extreme volatility and high cost of today's electric market, and also allowing time for new generation to go online. Neither of these amendments address what is really best in the best interest of the customer. And as you know, some of the chambers are considering ballot measures, so I thought it was important that I read this to you. I personally understand the cost to the companies in delaying for a long period of time, so I am not personally opposed to the 5 months delay. I did have one concern about the amendments, which I'd like to make known, the A15s and the A16s, both of them. On page 5, when they address on line 10 the low-income electric bill payment assistance.
I know, you're reading right from the...
This is the A and gross bill on page 5.
Oh, from the... Okay.
Right.
And line 9, section 7A. It just seems to me unclear the way the A15s and A16s are written. It says to delete the line and put in October 1st, 2001. So this is the way it reads. In addition to the public purpose charge provided under subsection 2 of this section, beginning on October 1, 2001, an electric company shall collect funds for low-income electric bill payment assistance in an amount determined under paragraph B of this subsection. Just the way this is written, it's unclear whether the public purpose charge is going to affect October 1 or the low-income electric bill assistance is. I would just like that made clear that the public purpose charge is not going to affect October 1. That would be my preference. And I know that is the intent of the amendments, but I think the wording is unclear. They need a period in there.
Okay. I didn't notice that.
And those are my only concerns.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Close? Thank you very much. Senator Perioli.
Mr. Chairman, thank you for convening the committee to have this hearing. I think it's timely, it's very critical, and I appreciate the opportunity to come testify to the bill and to the amendment.
We had it for 3 weeks from now. We thought it would be more timely to do it.
A couple of weeks from now, sure. Ted Perioli, Senate District 28, the district served by more public power than any other in Oregon. I'd like to talk big picture a little bit and then address the amendments themselves. I think all of us have been aware of the tremendous uncertainty that people are feeling over deregulation. We have watched as California has literally melted down over the issue of entering a deregulated market. We've also watched as British Columbia has reaped the benefits of the speculative markets in energy. BC Power, I think, has posted record profits since the speculative market exploded in California. That uncertainty has occurred essentially since the legislature adopted 1149. And I think when we were entering this hopeful period of deregulation, envisioning the continuation of surpluses at Bonneville Power Administration, we did not realize that we were on the threshold of the brave new world of electrical energy speculation. We've seen it with other commodities. I guess we just, in the Pacific Northwest, have gotten used to a penny and a half per kilowatt hour of electricity. And I think those days, like many of the other good things in Oregon life, may be a thing of nostalgia in a very short period of time. I think this committee is at a crossroads. I think the legislature is at the proverbial fork in the road. There are some excellent purposes in 1149. it's intended to stimulate investment in a market and intended in creating new generation facilities and increasing our capacity and decreasing our dependence on Bonneville Power Administration. The good part of that equation is that those things are happening today. We have in the Mid-Columbia the potential siting of literally hundreds of wind facilities that will use wind turbines to generate what we hope is between 1,000 and 2,000 megawatts within the next 2 to 5 years. And those siting applications are being processed. As a matter of fact, we even have ground being broken on those facilities in the Mid-Columbia on both sides of the river. Yesterday, we learned that there are deals even now being negotiated to buy up transmission capacity. And the reason I bring this up is because we've not yet reached the end of the disclosures about the different elements of this market. We're on a very, very steep learning curve about the elements that go into electrical energy creation, distribution, marketing, transmission, sales, sub-brokerages, international agreements, et cetera. And I remember back about 2.5 years ago sitting in a board meeting of one of my public utility commissions and noting that if I were to choose the people least capable of entering a speculative market in commodities, it would be the board of directors of my local public utility district, who were elected because of their conservatism, their connection to a community, their business acumen, and their risk aversion. These people are charged with the responsibility of providing one of the most precious commodities that farm families have, electricity. It is not replaceable. It is not a commodity that these communities can exist without. They are captive to the commodity and to the market that we create. And that is why we treat public utility districts somewhat differently than we do investor-owned utilities. 1149 does recognize there is a difference. But again, the point is, we haven't passed through this sea of uncertainty. We don't even have a map yet. We're just starting to learn of the new elements and aspects of this new market that we're entering into. Yet there are some people that say we should go full steam ahead with implementation of 1149, and we'll just learn as we go. Well, the folks in California have been learning as they go, and the results are not good. What it boils down to, colleagues, I think, is a crisis in consumer confidence. People are scared. And when they are scared, they tend to do things that are not thoughtful. And I hope this legislature can get beyond that issue and do something that is thoughtful. Because about 300,000 families in Oregon are going to be directly affected by any decision this committee makes, let alone the legislature as a whole. We've heard a lot of opinions offered by people that purport to know what they're talking about. One of them has been, well, you can't have investment until we have a market. So we need to implement 1149 before we'll have investment in building capacity. Well, guess what? Ground's already being broken. We have investment. There's going to be a huge market, and it's going to be driven by the increases in costs of electrical energy and the increases in revenue that are potential. We even have companies building facilities in Oregon who intend to wholly export their electrical energy product to California. We don't have to worry about having people come here to build facilities. They will come, and they are coming, and they are here now. As a matter of fact, my understanding is if you wanted to go out and buy a gas-fired turbine today, you'd have a 5-year wait to get the delivery of equipment because they've sold everything, even contractually, up to the next 5 years. It's already happening, colleagues. Here's the facts, and these are the ones that this bill needs to deal with. Costs are increasing. Rates will follow. The market is responding now, with or without 1149. But without surplus energy, there's no point in a deregulated market. If everything we can produce is already committed, then deregulation is just a hollow promise. I just point out the experience of Wasco County Public Utility District, who entered into a deregulated market without their eyes wide open. Their costs increased so dramatically in 1 month. I think they would have gone up without help from the Bonneville Power Administration and a redistribution of excess profits. Their cost for 1 month on the unregulated market would have been about $500,000. And that is a public utility district that is dedicated to service and their customer base.
What's it now?
The Wasco County Public Utility District is the only one in my district that elected to purchase about a third of their power on the unregulated.
No, sorry, you said it would have gone to 500,000.
Up to, yes, 500,000 more than their normal cost.
More than, okay.
More than their normal cost for 1 month. Well, back to consumer confidence and what we're asking for. I've sponsored legislation that asks for a straight delay of implementation of 1149 until this legislature can reconvene in 2003. I can't get that bill heard. What has been offered is an alternative that offers a 5-month delay and a process to engage the Public Utility Commission. Now, that process to engage the Public Utility Commission, I think, is a good alternative to a hard delay because it creates a venue that has within it certain predictable elements. One of the elements of predictability is that the process will be public, not like meetings that have been held in this building where representatives of public power have been asked to leave, pointedly excluded from compromise discussions on these amendments that you're considering today. Colleagues, that kind of a process is the one that creates distrust and anger among ratepayers, whether they are public utility customers or investor-owned utility customers. We need an open process. That's why the Public Utility Commission process seems to me to be a good alternative. Creates a venue.
Senator,
yes.
Just one more. As a result of Congress's work, ask my question and then finish it, and then you can answer. As a result of Congress's work, do you not believe that, number one, that deregulation is imminent, and that so true in the spirit of Oregonians that what we've tried to do is to prepare for that is imminent by setting standards in place? With that in mind, do you not believe that 1149, as we see it, and the amendments have not been adopted yet, but it, especially in the amendments that we see where we have people involvement, we have a task force that's been working for about 3 or 4 years now, do you not believe that we should be setting standards in place for a market that is unregulated?
Mr. Chairman, the good senator brings me to the point of the whole. And I think maybe that was her design, to bring me to the point of my testimony. The point of my, in answer to your question, I don't believe we should turn away from deregulation, but I think we ought to understand that from time to time things change, and why should we not be instructed by the things that have happened in neighboring states and all around us? I think we need to go forward on deregulation, but I think we have to have specific criteria to get there. The 5-month delay that's offered is a good idea. Going to the Public Utility Commission for a public process to decide whether or not we continue to implement 1149 or continue a delay is also a very necessary piece. It has to be an open, fair, and honest process, and the outcome cannot be preordained.
He keeps giving me questions, Mr. Chairman. May I ask them?
Yes, you may, Senator.
So, Senator, if with that in mind, do you not believe that since there has been a somewhat perceived notion that every time the Oregon Public Utility Commission has had a problem with the investor-owned utilities, that it has had a stay, as a result, there has been legal action. How can we give some certainty to the investor-owned utilities that there will not be any stalling of time to give them some certainty in this process?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, I think that issue, put it this way, if you don't have a hard delay until the legislature can reconvene and you want to go to a public utility process before the Public Utility Commission, no one can guarantee there will not be an appeal. There is no amendments that you can write. There is no certainty that you can give. There's nothing that you can offer. Because when you go to a public process that involves the community and you ask for input and you ask the commission to make a decision, and it is an administrative process, there's always an appeal. Now, somebody's told you that certain mechanisms or language in a particular amendment will protect people from litigation and appeal. It can't happen. If you're going to go to the public utility process and invite the public to participate, there will be a right of appeal. And to hold that up as a potential for not adopting a particular amendment is a red herring.
One other question.
Yes, sir.
Do you not trust the legislative process to come back in and convene itself and whether it's an emergency session or not to do the people's business in the event that there is some kind of unforeseen problem between the PUC and industrial utilities?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, I do trust the legislative process. I trust the people more. The fact of the matter is, by going to the Public Utility Commission, we give the options to the people, to the public of the state of Oregon. They cannot call us into special legislative session. The governor or the legislature may. But the fact of the matter, this issue will affect every single household, and it ought to be a public process, and it ought to be honest and fair, and it ought not to have a preordained outcome. The fact of the matter is, we do not know where we'll be in 6 months or 10 months or 12 months in a deregulated market, and we need to have a mechanism to go forward slowly. The bill that you have before you offers a five-month delay. One of the amendments offers an opportunity to have a public process before the Public Utility Commission and invite Oregonians to have their say on the issue. As long as it's an open and honest process without a preordained outcome, I think that is a better compromise alternative than turning fully away from deregulation or implementing a bill where we do not know what the outcome will be.
Senator, on that basis, then, you would support the -16
Mr. Chairman, if this committee's wisdom is to move the -16 amendment, that is the bill that I will support. I had asked for a different process. I had asked for simply a PUC process where the public would be involved, and in that process, the findings of specific facts. One, a market exists in which retail customers of electric utilities may purchase adequate supplies of power. Two, the market is sufficiently liquid so retail customers may obtain multiple bids within a reasonable time. Three, supplies of electric power available for purchase in the markets that are reliable. Four, competition so that no supplier dominates the market. And five, the prices charged by suppliers wouldn't wildly fluctuate. If the Public Utility Commission can make those findings of facts, there's no reason not to implement 1149. If the PUC cannot make those findings, then there isn't a sufficient market to justify deregulation, and they should hold for delay.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
I had not finished my third point. Thank you very much. Though the civil tongue senator with the Paulinian approach to dealing with issues has spoken, handsome, debonair as he may be, the Citizens Utility Board has been a public voice that has worked for this, and they had programs all on cable television regarding this issue. Do you not trust the process that they have dealt with because they've been on the board at the table all the times in terms of speaking for the people?
Mr. Chairman, to the senator's question, I do trust that process, and I do trust those brand new, inexperienced, green appointees as long as we require them to have specific findings of fact before they move us forward into deregulation.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, ma'am.
Senator, I guess I was curious then what your stand would be on the -15 amendments.
The -15 amendments, I believe, lack a feature the -16 amendments do. I tend to favor the 16. They are not the amendments that I requested to be brought before this committee. Mm-hmm. The amendments that I requested simply featured a PUC process with specific mm-hmm. findings of fact. The argument was that those specific findings might lead to lawsuits or appeals. There's no process I know before the PUC that would not lead to an appeal.
Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate you being here.
Mr. Chairman, your courage and wisdom in holding this hearing are much appreciated.
Any other questions? Okay. Representative Witt, would you like to join us? Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, and I appreciate this opportunity to give testimony this morning. I'm Bill Witt, State Representative, House District 7. I'd like to make a few brief comments, Mr. Chairman, and not take too much of the committee's time, but there is a few points I'd like to make. Number one, we do have an energy crisis in the western United States. That energy crisis has nothing to do, however, with Senate Bill 1149. It has to do with an imbalance between supply and demand. Namely, over the course of the last 8 to 10 years, demand has been increasing at the rate of approximately 4 to 5% per year on the West Coast, and supply has been increasing in a very much smaller percentage, and it's created a situation not just in California but throughout the West Coast and to a certain extent around the nation that we have demand that is significantly exceeding supply. During this legislative session, there has been a well-coordinated bipartisan effort in both the Senate and in the House and with the governor's office and with a variety of private interests that have a concern relative to power to address that imbalance in supply and demand. And I think the legislature has responded very appropriately in passing Senate Bill 843, House Bill 3788, House Bill 3790, and other measures that are designed to encourage or to remove impediments from the development of new supply here in Oregon, and also to encourage conservation. We've also passed a number of bills that provide additional incentives for both businesses and residential consumers to conserve. So I think the legislature has responded very appropriately to a very serious problem, and that problem being the imbalance of supply and demand. If you look at Senate Bill 1149, I don't believe there's anything in Senate Bill 1149 that will cause rates to go up. And I want to reiterate what I think has been said many, many times. Senate Bill 1149 is not anything close or near to what was done in California in 1996. It is radically different. The people continue to use California as an example for Oregon, even though our legislation is radically different. An examination of Senate Bill 1149 shows that residential consumers are not in any way forced to market under that legislation. In fact, what we did in Senate Bill 1149 is we enhanced their choice. They can continue to get power the way they've been getting it on a cost of service basis. The PUC can develop other alternatives such as green power or market-based rates, and it will be up to residential consumers to make a choice if they want to leave their current cost of service arrangement. Smaller businesses are not forced to market. They continue to buy power just the way they've been buying power. Industrial users who want to, under Senate Bill 1149, can go to market if the PUC allows them. There is a provision in Senate Bill 1149 which gives the PUC discretion to delay the requirement of larger industrial commercial users to go to market if it finds that the market conditions are not right for them. And then finally, there are a number of other provisions in Senate Bill 1149, which I think are very, very positive, and they're important to Oregon's future, one being the public purposes charges, which will encourage more market-based transformation to alternative energy sources. It will encourage weatherization. It will encourage conservation. It is an important component in transitioning from a very much fossil fuel-dependent energy system to something that will be much more diversified in terms of the energy sources that people will be using. Senate Bill 1149 also has low-income bill payment assistance of $10 million a year to help low-income Oregonians pay their heating bills in the winter. If we delay or throw out Senate Bill 1149, we're hurting low-income people in this state, as we're taking away from them this very important provision to provide assistance to low-income people to make sure that their homes are heated in the winter. And I've always found it interesting that those who are in rural areas of the state who are not even impacted by Senate Bill 1149, 2 years ago, who requested to be outside of the purview of Senate Bill 1149, and the legislature granted that request. At that point, we're neutral on the bill. Now they're coming in and they're opposing the bill, even though the bill does not in any way directly impact the merger customers. So I think if you look at Senate Bill 1149, you see something that is thoughtful. It is not California. It includes some important provisions that will protect low-income Oregonians, that will help us transition to an energy future that is diversified and not so dependent upon fossil fuel energy. The other point I'd like to make, Mr. Chairman, is that it is very critical that when you look at the kind of reforms that we've been passing this session designed to encourage the siting of additional energy facilities, to encourage alternative energy source development, to encourage conservation. It's very important that we have some market certainty. The kinds of investments that will be required to bring these new plants online and up and functioning and bringing power to Oregonians is in the billions of dollars. If we constantly continue to change the rules or constantly have a question mark as to what our rules are going to be when it comes to energy and energy restructuring here in the state of Oregon, that investment will be chilled. Business people are not going to make those kinds of massive investments when they don't know the ground rules under which they will be operating. And it is my belief that if we do a long-term delay or a repeal, what we are doing is we're undermining the very legislation that we have been working to pass this session, which has been designed to encourage the development of additional energy resources and also the siting, the more quick siting of additional energy plants. So for all of those reasons, Mr. Chairman, I would encourage this committee to be very thoughtful. And if it's going to support a delay, I would encourage a minimal delay, not a long-term delay, and certainly not a repeal. A five-month delay seems reasonable to me. Frankly, I would prefer no delay because I don't think it's really addressing a critical problem. But a five-month delay, I don't think, would create adverse consequences relative to the development of new energy sources. I think it's, I personally don't think it's very helpful, but it may soothe some concerns relative to this process. If it does that, it may be helpful. But I would encourage the committee to look at 1149 for what's in it, not for what people talk or say about California. I'd also encourage the committee to look at it in the full context of the legislation we've been passing this session to try to thoughtfully address the energy crisis in the West Coast.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any other legislators that need I'm going to ask about three of you at a time to come up here. Kevin Lynch from Pacific Core, Mike Greeney from the Office of Energy, and Mark. Well, I have two here. Maybe I'll hold for a minute. I'll just take the two of you right now. Yeah. Good morning. Welcome to committee. Please identify yourselves.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Mike Rainey from the Oregon Office of Energy. I want to commend the committee for this hearing and for the amendments we have before you. I think the amendments all improve House Bill 3633, and in particular, the dash 15s and 16s. I think both of them present a good approach for the committee. They both improve the bill. I think the dash 15s are preferable to the 16s. Let me mention briefly why. The dash 15s do provide a five-month, what's called a hard delay, a delay in the entire provisions of Senate Bill 1149 going into effect. After that, they provide for, as other speakers have mentioned, the cost of service rate option, which is a fully regulated rate available to any customer who chooses or does not have the ability to go to the market, who chooses not to go to the market. That cost of service rate must remain in effect until July 1st of 2003, and in fact must remain in effect after that unless the PUC, after a public process with findings and report and opportunity for full public participation, makes certain findings that regulated rate is no longer necessary. I think that provides the type of protection that we need in this uncertain market. The advantage I see to that over the dash 16s, which would have a PUC process prior to the cost of service rate and the rest of Senate Bill 1149 going into effect, is I do think the energy developers need certainty on what the regulatory climate in Oregon will be. We do have power plants under construction. We also have applications pending for new facilities. At the same time, we have had situations, particularly in our neighboring states, in both California and in Washington, where applications have been filed for energy facilities and, in fact, have received state approval, over 2,000 megawatts in each state, where construction did not go forward. We haven't had that in Oregon, and I think it's because we've had a certainty and a clarity of what our regulatory structure has been and our siting structure. And the bills that you had passed earlier this year that Representative Witt mentioned on energy siting will help us expedite the siting process for new facilities. But uncertainty as to whether Senate Bill 1149 would go into effect, I think, would send the wrong signal to developers. So for that reason, I commend the dash 15s as a preferable alternative for you.
Thank you very much, Mike. Kevin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Kevin Lynch. I'm Vice President of Government Affairs for PacifiCorp. I appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning and would like to do so in support of the dash 15 amendments. And just make a couple of comments without taking it too long. I look at the structure set up in the dash 15 amendments, namely the 5-month delay as in effect a belt and the 15-month and the in perpetuity, but at least a 15-month cost of service option for every customer as the suspenders. And I don't think we need any more than one of each in order to give customers the assurances that they are not going to be subject to the volatility of the wholesale market if they don't want to be. It's worth noting that prices go up and down in a regulated business. Our prices in Oregon between the late 80s and the mid 90s were either at or below where they were in the mid 80s on an ongoing basis. They started to creep up subsequent to that, but that's under a regulated regime. Prices are going to go up and down in a deregulated environment as well, and if customers want that choice, it's fine. But if customers want the assurance of remaining under regulation, then they can do so under this legislation, and will continue to do so unless the commission finds that there's no reason, no real good reason, that the free market can't be a substitute for that. So we're willing to go along with a 5-month delay in implementing the law. Frankly, we believe we're going to be ready to go on October 1st. So if it's wisdom, the legislature and the governor decide not to have any delay, we believe we'll be ready to implement the law from a technical standpoint. One of the reasons I mention that is that we've spent a lot of time and effort to get ready to implement this law. Over the course of the last 2 years, we've done an awful lot of things for our own, for our customer service system, putting in new meters for most of our commercial customers, and doing all the sorts of things that we needed to do to comply with this law. If at the last minute the state decides that the implementation date of the law is going to be later than we had anticipated it was going to be, we're going to begin to run into a problem where we are perhaps not being made whole on the commitments that we were obliged to make under the law. So getting beyond 5 months begins to become a problem for us with respect to the issue of cost recovery. I think grudgingly we can go forward with these amendments, with the Dash 15 amendments, without an explicit guarantee that we can begin to recover our costs on October 1st. We can debate that issue with the commission. I think if we get much beyond the March issue, you begin to run into a very serious public policy question, which is, what is the obligation of the state to a company to give it the opportunity to recover the investments that it made before it, in effect, well, a bait and switch is too harsh a phrase, but it in effect is it would probably be viewed by our investors as one. So at this point,
always blame it on the state.
Yeah, but that only goes so far with our investors. At this point, we think that the Dash 15 amendments are clearly the way to go and would urge the committee to support them. Thank you.
Questions for Kevin or for Mike? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to call Mark Anderson and Tim Nesbitt to come. Good morning. Welcome to committee.
Thank you. I think I'm going to speak first. Is that right, Tim? Okay. I'm going to read this, if you don't mind. Thank you. Good morning. My name is Mark Anderson. I'm Government Affairs Manager for International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 125 in Portland. We have 3,700 members who work in virtually all aspects of the day-to-day operations of Oregon's electrical system. Our primary employers are Portland General Electric, PacifiCorp, Bonneville Power Administration, and some 25 smaller utilities and line construction companies. I come to you today in support of the original 18-month delay proposed in House Bill 3633, which passed by an overwhelming 49-10 margin in the House. House Bill 3633 is the only surviving bill of a total of 13 filed this session by both Republicans and Democrats asking for repeal, delay, or revision of Oregon's electrical deregulation program under Senate Bill 1149. We believe that the proposed five-month delay, with further delay a matter to be addressed by the Oregon PUC at a later date, is skirting the very real energy supply issue which currently plagues us. This five-month delay is a compromise worked out among the very few proponents of Oregon electrical deregulation. Utilities, organized labor, and many others have been excluded from the discussions which have occurred since House Bill 3633 emerged from the House. We deeply resent the fact that those of us closest to the issues have not been allowed to provide input. For the record, IBEW Local 125 and the Oregon AFL-CIO have asked for a three-year delay in implementation of Oregon's deregulation plan, with a thorough review at the end of the period to determine if there is any benefit to customers. If no benefit is shown after October 1, 2004, we would support repeal of the plan. We believe that a three-year delay would allow utilities to address the myriad metering, billing, and other issues, and would allow the California deregulation catastrophe to sort itself out. I'd also like to point out that customers have clearly indicated that they don't want any type of tinkering with Oregon's low-cost, reliable electrical supply system. In a survey done on behalf of Portland General Electric and provided to all legislators, 60% of customers surveyed were opposed to deregulation, with 40% strongly opposed. We believe that those not deeply interested and involved in energy issues will have difficulty separating the ongoing steep rate increases with Oregon's deregulation plan. And we predict that the legislature and governor, rightly or wrongly, will be blamed if action is not taken. We ask you to please consider these issues as you decide the fate of House Bill 3633 and electrical supply in Oregon. Thank you. I'd be pleased to take any questions.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tim Nesbitt, president of the Oregon AFL-CIO. I want to just remind you of the impact that energy costs are having on employment throughout Oregon. We have more than 10,000 fewer jobs in Oregon than we had 12 months ago, 6,200 fewer manufacturing jobs. And a large number of those have been lost because of the effects we've already felt in Oregon of the high cost of electricity. I'll name two: the Reynolds aluminum smelter in Troutdale shut down, and Adafina Chemical in North Portland shut down. We are especially concerned about the threats to our large industrial employers in the state as we look ahead to the uncertainty of the summer and the uncertainty of next winter and the energy supply problems and costs in those periods. We've been worried especially about the pulp and paper sector, and I noticed this morning you received a letter from an attorney representing Pope and Talbot raising similar concerns and sharing with you some of their experiences with looking ahead towards what an open market might look like for that particular industrial customer. Currently, I think nobody argues that energy markets are dysfunctional. This is a commodity market where profit maximization leads too often to price gouging, and where for the last, in this instance, the last megawatt available that's needed, generators can demand and get prices as high as the equivalent of $250 per gallon of gasoline. And that's what we've seen not only in California, but in neighboring states because of the debacle in that state. We believe it makes no sense to send our largest industries, our largest employers, into this market, as Senate Bill 1149 would do on October 1 of this year. We think we need more time to see this market stabilize, and a delay simply to March 1 of next year, even if the PUC gets to take a second look, is really more uncertainty, to kind of turn around the concern about uncertainty here, than our largest employers should have to deal with. At best, Senate Bill 1149 offers them an option that in current market environment they shouldn't want and they wouldn't benefit from. So why allow it to take effect, whether in October 1 of this year or even March 1 of next year? And for consumers, whenever 1149 kicks in for consumers, what choices are we offering them, I mean, the residential consumers? The choice among higher and highest prices. When we don't expect any of them to go for anything other than the regulated market rate that would be part of that three-option package. So this is a bill which at best offers choices that don't make sense in this environment and that consumers, both industries and individuals, shouldn't want. We would like to see longer than an 18-month delay, but we are happy to see that in the siting bill already passed, House Bill 3788, there's a removal from 1149 of that Section 6, which it would have allowed PUC to encourage the divestment of generating capacity among utilities. So that alleviates one concern. With that in mind, we're willing to support the 18-month delay as proposed in the original bill. We also would be willing to see separately a earlier implementation of the public purposes because of what they will accomplish in regard to conservation. But we do urge you to look longer than the 5-month delay proposed in the amendments and look at least to the 18-month delay envisioned and already supported by the House bill. Thank you.
Yes.
Mark, either you or Tim, regarding the issue that has been brought before the committee that that it's critical to have a delay that is measurable and also certainty to the marketplace to help encourage with the when taking in aggregate the other bills that have been passed to encourage more energy supply, that in order to make sure that that supply is on hand, that it is developed, and the role of the supply and demand equation works in order to keep prices down because of supply. I just was curious as to your feeling on that argument that a further delay creates further uncertainty, further would delay additional supply, which is ultimately going to be the requisite requirement for keeping prices stable.
Mr. Chair and Senator Metzger, actually, we believe that a regulated environment provides the greatest certainty for return on investment if properly structured. Now, true, we're dealing with a larger deregulated environment beyond our own borders. That adds to the uncertainty. That we can't control by 1149, with 1149 or with its repeal. But we're seeing already, and I think others know better than I, a significant number of plants being built, being sited and built. That will have an impact on supply in the current environment. And we expect to see that over the next 18 months to 3 years. What we're saying is, at a minimum, we should wait to see this market stabilize, wait to see supply catch up with demand. There are many, many incentives right now in the current environment for more supply to come forward. And we don't think it, there's uncertainty and certainty to be argued on both sides of this issue. We just think it doesn't in any way ameliorate the problem. It can compound the problem if what we do is go forward with 1149 within the next 18 months.
Okay. Other questions for Tim and Mark? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Deborah Kennedy, Jeff, and Gary.
My twin.
Okay, your twin. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Gary Conkling, here today representing the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities. And I first off want to thank Senators Beyer, Metzger, and Nelson, who have worked hard, and others as well, to try to fashion a compromise on this legislation. And while we perhaps didn't come to absolute agreement, I think we narrowed the issues considerably, and they should count that as a success. After having spent 5 years on this, if you can reduce the debates to the level that we've reduced them, that is some degree much more than just a minor success. The industrial customers of Northwest Utilities are some of this state's largest electricity users. They are the largest electricity users. Some of them are also producers. And they have wrestled mightily with higher prices. Some of them have had to close plants. There's no question they wish the situation was different. They have felt directly the sting of higher prices. But they've also evaluated what the future is Their considered opinion is we need to move ahead with Oregon's restructuring. They support implementation of Senate Bill 1149. As you know, they were one of the principal advocates for pushing its passage in the last two legislative sessions. Its implementation is important, and we think represents the only viable future we have for creating opportunity balanced against reasonable protection. And while some people note the prices on the spot market for many industrial customers, perhaps initially only the largest ones, there are other market opportunities, including the ability to work with power producers to help build some of the plants that will provide the stability and the additional power, and ultimately, perhaps, under the most serendipitous situations, power surpluses that will benefit all ratepayers and users. In an investor business-backed environment, the ability of having a secured contract with large users can be a very valuable component in moving ahead with a plan. We support the House Bill 3633 as amended by the A15 amendment. We think that it addresses both the political and substantive questions that the legislative body has wrestled with. If you adopt this amendment, I think every senator or every legislator would be able to stand in front of a town hall meeting and say that you have preserved the protections in Senate Bill 1149 that don't send any residential customer or small business customer into an unstructured market or into some competitive market. You also provide them greater protections as ratepayers than they have in today's system. You also will address the need for low-income heating assistance for Oregonians who will face higher prices and the very difficult choice of what to decide to do to heat their house or to have a meal. You will deal with public purpose charges and the investments that they are intended to provide, particularly in conservation, which are a critical way of reducing demand as we also attempt to increase supply through the siting bills that have been referenced. You will afford business customers who have an opportunity to go to market a very valuable protection, and that is the protection that they will not be forced into a market. The guaranteed cost of service provisions, which through these amendments will be made indefinite, are a very substantial protection, maybe the most important protection that you could afford customers, business customers, of any other action that you can take. And so you will do that through the A15 amendments. You also will have achieved, by the hard delay of 5 months, a separation between the implementation of Senate Bill 1149 and the new contracts that Bonneville will have coming into place October 1, which will have with them new rate structures. I think most people acknowledge there's no connection, but in fact the timing, the coincidence of the timing would be awkward and politically confusing. So this creates a separation that I think is reasonable, plus the 5 months, accedes to a request by PGE that it needs some additional time to talk with its own consumers. And so for all of those reasons, we support the A15 amendment. Let me just conclude with a comment about the A16 amendment. While I think it's much improved from other versions of the so-called punt to the PUC, the concern that we have is that the legislative process has been an open process that's continued now this for the third session to talk about this subject. While we have no real problem having the PUC be involved, in fact, it has been very much involved through the rulemaking process that we think has been very successful in the interim leading up to this session. Our real concern is that we're creating through this punt a contested hearing that we believe will, in fact, result in going to a third venue, to a court, that is hardly an open public process. And we will have an undetermined, potentially at least an undetermined delay. And attendant with that will be costs of both the contested case in front of the PUC and ultimately any court action that customers will bear if they are involved in that litigation, which they surely would be, certainly my client would be. And moreover, the delay itself that could occur, as Mr. Lynch from PacifiCorp noted, can in fact accrue stranded costs that utilities properly will ask for cost recovery that will be paid for by the ratepayers of PGE and PacifiCorp's territory, not generally by everybody in the state, but just by those ratepayers. And we think that, in fact, when you look at the politics of that, the gain that you get for an affirmation, essentially, from the PUC that we should move forward with a cost-to-service rate probably isn't worth the threat and the potential cost to ratepayers. So we don't support the A16 amendment. We think, in fact, you have given the customers, business customers, the best protection and the protection they really have sought, which is access to a cost-to-service rate similar to what they would have if they did nothing, if 1149 didn't exist. Thank you.
Yes.
Is it your pleasure to let everybody speak and then ask questions or ask each other?
Go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Conklin, in the earlier report, there were approximately 16,000 people have been laid off as a result of lack of power supply or conservation in the Northwest. How do you see a deregulated market bringing back on the workers that have been affected by job loss?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carter, there's no question that there are some plants that operate on a very narrow margin, and the increased cost of energy has just made their operations infeasible. One of the things that's positive about higher prices is that it has caused manufacturers in particular, but this is probably true for commercial customers that someone else can speak to better than myself, but certainly for manufacturers to look at their manufacturing processes for efficiency and conservation. And in fact, this is going on. One of the real values for the public purpose charge that's part of 1149 is an element that allows self-directed conservation by large customers that will in fact allow us to use the money that we're investing in our own plant operations to achieve conservation. And through doing that, I believe that's going to offer the best opportunity to help plants regain some of their efficiency so they can be competitive and restore their operations. In addition, we've worked well with both investor-owned utilities as well as other consumer-owned utilities on programs that generally go by the name of a demand exchange program, where in return for usually relatively short-term, sometimes peak period curtailments, to allow essentially utilities to avoid having to buy more expensive power that all of their ratepayers would have to pay. We think that that's a way of sort of sharing the pain without resulting in long-term layoffs. And while that's not directly in response to your question, I think it's also important to say that I think the utilities have worked very carefully and thoughtfully with industrial customers, and we've attempted to do the same.
Tom, did you want to add anything to what you were saying? Pardon?
Do you want to talk?
Okay. All right. Go ahead. Deborah, let me start with you again.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Deborah Kennedy with the Community Action Directors of Oregon. We would like to support the implementation of the low-income bill payment assistance portion of this on time on October 1st. This is a very important part of this because on a statewide basis, only 20% of the people eligible for the federal energy assistance dollars get access to them. So these funds will help additional households prevent a disconnection of their electricity and provide heat through the winter months this year. In addition, while we support the on-time implementation of 1149, we understand that a five-month delay is a reasonable compromise. Letting it go any longer will prevent a lot of funds that could be used for conservation, weatherization, and new sources of energy. Those funds are important because of the supply and demand problem that we're facing right now. And then on a final note, I recently attended the National Low Income Energy Conference in Cincinnati this year, and the problem in California was a huge topic of conversation, and many times throughout the conference, the legislation that we created in Oregon was mentioned as an example of what to do right, so I hope that you take that into account. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Bissonette, and I'm representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. CUB is the designated in state statute as the representative of residential ratepayers in the state of Oregon of regulated utilities, including not only electricity, but also telecommunications and natural gas. CUB is also a member of the Fair and Clean Energy Coalition, which is a statewide collaboration of public interest organizations, about 120 consumer organizations such as OSPIRG, Oregon Action, Oregon Consumer League, environmental organizations such as the Oregon Environmental Council, Northwest Energy Coalition, Renewable Northwest Project, and human service agencies like the Community Action Network, Salvation Army, Oregon Heat, and others. Together, CUB and Fair and Clean have been working on energy deregulation, energy restructuring issues since 1996. We entered it not so much out of a love of deregulation, but of a real perceived need to protect consumers, preserve the environment, and make sure that Oregonians have access to affordable electricity service. Those were the primary principles that we went into this process and tried to negotiate. Any plan that Oregon had to restructure its electricity industry had to meet those criteria. And we've been a strong supporter of Senate Bill 1149 because we do feel it meets those principles. You've heard a lot about 1149 and the amendments to 3633. I will say for the record that we are also supporting the A15 amendments to 3633. As was mentioned earlier, we believe that that provides not only good policy for the state of Oregon in terms of making sure that the utilities are ready to go to implement 1149 to make sure that low-income people are not adversely affected by a delay of 1149, and to make sure that all customers, the residential customers, will always have a cost of service guarantee that already exists in 1149. And what the A15 amendments do is extend that same protection to non-residential customers. And really, that guarantee of a cost of service is really the only reason to delay. Why would you want to delay? To make sure that customers stay with what they have now. Guaranteeing that cost of service does that. But with the A15 amendments, you provide the choice. If a larger customer decides that it's ready to go, it can go. And that is, and we think that is an acceptable compromise. I will also note that we believe that any sort of longer delay, say the 18 months that is proposed in 3633 as it came over from the House, actually prevents or provides some dangers to consumers. Right now in 1149, consumers have an ironclad guarantee that they will not pay for an industrial or commercial customer to go to the market. 1149 sets up a very orderly process for that to happen and provides a very strong guarantee that residential customers will not be on the hook for costs of the system that are left behind. If there is a delay in 1149, there is nothing to prevent a commercial or industrial customer, if it decides that it wants to, for whatever reason, to go to the market. Those guarantees would not be in effect. We believe we need those protections in place as soon as possible, and the amendments in A15 provide for the good policy that we need, and also for the good politics, so that you as legislators can say in all good conscience to any constituent, either a business constituent or a voting constituent, in terms of an actual human being, that you did everything that you could to protect consumers, all consumers in your district, from the uncertainty that we're seeing in the electrical industry. I'll close with just a couple of quick observations and some responses from remarks that we've heard this morning. First of all, Senator Carter asked about imminent federal deregulation. In terms of whether or not the federal government is going to impose plans on states, that may not be imminent. But what we do know is already present is that federal policy changed about a decade ago by the passage of the Energy Policy Act in 1992. The passage of that act changed the utility world forever. It created the wholesale market. And what it became incumbent upon states to do is to align state policy with that change in federal policy. Where most states went in realigning their state's policy is saying we're going to depend pretty much 100% on that wholesale market to meet the needs of our load of our state. What we said in Oregon is that's not where we want to go. We're willing to depend somewhat on that market, but we have traditional low-cost assets that we want to protect and that we don't want to get rid of, and those are going to be dedicated to A, serving residential customers, and B, making sure that the commercial and industrial customers that paid for those plants get the value of those plants as they explore their opportunities in the market. It's a much more we think, honest approach to aligning state policy to meet federal policy and to recognize that the utility world has changed and probably is not going back. And we will probably not see a repeal of the Energy Policy Act. I guess I'll just close with a quick nod to Representative Ackerman's proposed amendments and actually note that I'm not sure whether he meant to or not, but I think he sort of anticipated in many ways the A15 amendments. In his point one of the letter, and I didn't sort of correlate them to the various amendments that he passed out, he calls for the reinstatement of the public purpose fee to October 1, 2001. While that's a good idea, it sort of breaks the deal that we have with our larger allies, that public purposes and direct access are kind of tied together, where we have seen a recognition of the fact that there are very important resources that are needed right now is the beginning of the low-income bill payment assistance on time on October 1st. And that is a recognition that everybody has and that gets part way to Representative Ackerman's concerns, and that a five-month delay in waiting for the rest of the public purpose charges to support ongoing conservation, to support renewable energy, to support low-income weatherization is a reasonable time to wait and won't unduly hurt any conservation efforts. In his point two, adding the word per year afterwards, $10 million on the bill, that's already been fixed. Both chambers of the legislature passed Senate Bill 843, and it's already been signed by the governor, and that fix has already been made, and that $10 million for low-income energy assistance will happen on an annual basis. And then finally, he suggests deleting the original Section 7 from 3633, and that has already been done in the A15 amendments. If you support the A15 amendments, you support that. And Mr. Lynch from PacifiCorps sort of addressed sort of the utilities needs on all that, and a five-month delay makes them comfortable for being able to manage their cost recovery systems. I guess I'll close with just a last summary of the A15 amendments to 3633 is good policy and good politics. We urge you to support them. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Tom Gallagher. I represent PNE, G&E, National Energy Group, probably the only person that ends up at these tables actually representing the market, as it were, the people who want to build power plants and sell into the market. There are others out there, but I'm the one that ends up at the table. The first thing I would do is commend Representative Witt's
mic closer.
I would commend Representative Witt's testimony to you. He remains probably the most lucid commentary on what has happened over the last 5 years and where the policy that this legislature has crafted is headed. He says it much better than the rest of us, and so I would repeat that. The other thing I would add is about the policy uncertainty that continued delay brings. We will agree to, the markets will agree to the five-month delay as being reasonable for particular reasons which others have talked about. The uncertainty I want to talk about, and I'll just make four quick points. One is there's a huge difference between an application for a permit to build a power plant and actually getting the funding and the financing to build a power plant. In the world of the market power plants, you must go to the investor market. You must go to private investors, to Wall Street, to your company capital to build a power plant. When a utility built a power plant under the old system, they went to the consumers to take the risk, and they recovered the cost of that risk in the rate payments for the power that they generated. Under the wholesale market system, it's a new world. So if there are 50 or 60 applications in for a power plant, don't look for 50 or 60 power plants. There's very much of a tremendous need for power plants to be developed in the Northwest. The bulk of the plants that are requests online are natural gas generating plants, and there are limitations on those plants based on the availability of generators, the availability of natural gas, and natural gas is more expensive than hydropower. And as we reduce our reliance on hydropower, as our demand grows and we have less hydropower, there's going to be an increase in the cost of power that consumers pay. Those increases are being experienced in the current volatile market. There's a shortage of generation both in California and in the Northwest, and we need to build those plants. One of the issues that I continually remind my clients about building plants in Oregon is if you have no Oregon customers, you face not Oregon energy policy, but Oregon land use policy, Oregon NIMBY policy, Oregon local taxation policies. If your plant that's located in Oregon is not selling to Oregon customers, if it's exporting power to California, Oregonians will apply a whole different set of public policies to your plant. We want to have Oregon customers. We do not want to have our power simply exported somewhere else using Oregon's resources to do that. So we look for larger companies to go into the market. We look for the Oregon utilities and BPA to buy power from us. The more buyers there are in a commodity market, the more long-term purchases are made, the more stability there is in the pricing. So when you introduce more uncertainty into whether or not we'll have Oregon buyers, you put more risk into the ultimate steps of the decision-making process as to whether a plant will be built. It's very easy for other people to talk about how many apps are in and what companies will do and how much power is needed and how much money is being made, but all of us know it's a whole lot different when you're sitting down in front of a bunch of investment bankers discussing whether or not they should loan you $450 million to build this power plant and how they're going to get their money back.
Dang, Tom, are you discouraging businesses from coming here?
I'm sorry.
You're discouraging the investor-owned persons from coming to Oregon? Is that tough? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not trying to discourage it. I'm telling you about what uncertainty exists.
Okay.
If you don't stay the course with the policy that you've developed.
Okay.
We can build a power plant somewhere else to sell into the regional market, and you will benefit by it. But there are local benefits for Oregonians in terms of income taxes, and property taxes, jobs, and other things from these power plants. And there is a great deal of advantage in terms of economic development to build these plants in Oregon.
Okay.
We just want to have an Oregon customer here to sell part of that power to.
Okay. I don't want to rush you.
I'll pass this on to Julie unless there are other questions.
I have one person before Julie, too, to testify. And I'm not trying to move you fast, but ways and means is
I understand
out of quorum or something.
If there are no questions, I'm done.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions for our other panelists?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Louise, why don't you come on up? And Julie, why don't you stay up? It's good. Louise Wendling? Did you want to testify? You're on my list. Did you want to testify?
Do you want to talk?
Or do you just have something you want to share with the committee?
I've got some babies for you.
Pardon?
I have to keep the handout.
Okay, you want to just hand those out, or do you need to? Any comments you want to make? Well, we can read this if you just. Any comments? Good morning. Welcome to the committee. You want to identify yourself?
Good morning, Chairman Duncan, members of the committee.
I am Mrs. Louise Weidlich, Director of the Neighborhoods Protective Association, P.O. Box 19224, Portland 97219. I'm going to just read the letter that I sent to you requesting the hearing.
Louise, could we just put this in, we all have it.
Which I, what?
Could we all have it? Could we just...
Oh, you already do have it?
Right, we all have it.
Yeah.
So would you just, any quick comments you want to make? I'm trying to rush you and Julian a little bit here because we have to get to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Any comments you want to make besides what you've sent to us?
You don't need to read my letter, you mean?
No, we could, we read fast up here. If there's any quick comments you want to add to the letter, be fine.
Well, the main thing is that energy is needed for productivity. We must not give up our manufacturing base and limit lighting and energy in the Pacific Northwest. The book, The Energy Non-Crisis, tells about the oil in Alaska, already drilled and waiting to be hooked up to pipelines to bring it to the United States of America. I have the article here. It says, huge Alaska oil reserves go unused. The United States has more oil reserves than Saudi Arabia, but this happy, though shocking information has been covered up for years. The wells have been drilled. It's merely a matter of turning on the faucets to supply America's need for 200 years. These astounding revelations have been confirmed by a 30-year veteran oil executive who has leukemia and has decided to speak out. In 1980, Lindsay Williams wrote a book, The Energy Non-Crisis, based upon his eyewitness accounts during the construction of the transatlantic pipeline. As a chaplain assigned to executive status and the advisory board of Atlantic Richfield, he was privy to detailed information. All of our energy problems that have been solved in the 70s with the huge discovery of oil under Gull Island, Prudhoe Bay, Alaska, Williams said. There is more pure grade oil there than in all of Saudi Arabia. Gull Island contains as much oil and natural gas as Americans could use in 200 years. Oddly, though, immediately after this massive discovery, the federal government ordered the rigs to be capped and oil production shut down. Developing Alaskan oil would make the United States completely independent of oil imports, Williams said in his book. Why is the government covering up such good news? Why does it want to depend us dependent on imported oil? Do international financiers who are heavily invested in the oil industry want to keep the supply limited and prices up? Will the Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee, chaired by Senator Mark Frank Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, investigate what could be a criminal cover-up?
You have a question.
Will the appropriate House committees inquire or the Justice Department?
Louise, Smith, I think.
Well, Louise, I just want to, I just read through your letter and other things. I just want to see if I can kind of capsulize this, but what you're saying here with your letter that you provide us, that you feel that we need to stop deregulation essentially now. I mean, these are some of the arguments of why that's not necessary.
That's the basis of my argument.
Right.
Why don't we...
regulation.
Right.
Why don't you be sure to give a copy of that to Nancy, and we'll put that in the record, too. Why don't I just ask this, are there any questions that any of you have? You've all had a chance to read Louise's letter. Do you have any questions for her at this particular point?
Well, I won't
okay.
go on.
I think
really shocked if I came across this article in regard to the hydroelectric dams, which have to do with our electricity.
Right.
Can I read it?
I tell you what, Louise, my problem I'm having is I have people have to get the Ways and Means Committee because they don't have a quorum right now. So I'm going to have to move it. So if you leave it with Nancy, we'll put it in the record. And if any questions for Louise, I think we have your letter. You know where she's coming from. If I can,
well, I want to please let me this part out. The 1931 Hydroelectric Act provided that amortization and repayment of a private utility's investments in a hydroelectric dam, the dam will become the property of the state, free and clear of all claims, liens, and rights whatsoever of the licensee or any person. On November 8, 32, by initiative petition, the people of Oregon enacted Article 11D, Section 1 of the Constitution of Oregon, quote, the rights, titles, interest in, and all water in the development of water power and to water power sites which the state of Oregon now owns or may acquire shall be held in perpetuity.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then in 1995, the state legislature, House Bill 3087, supported by Pacific Power and Light and PGE, repealed the 31 Act. But it says here that on June 4th, 97, the Oregon Public Utilities Commission authorized Enron, a multinational energy corporation, to acquire ownership of Portland General Electric. On December 1st, 97, PGE filed a claim with the PUC to auction off these dams.
Okay.
Now, the...
Louise, what we're going to...
There is a Mr...
Louise, I'm going to have to... Nancy will make copies of that for each of us, if you'd get that to her over there. Okay.
I'll just finish by saying, postpone any decision on any deregulation until after the next session of the legislature in 2003.
Okay, stand by and you see what we do then in a minute. Okay, Julie, any quick comments from you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Julie Brandis with AOI. Although usually we can testify as a coalition together, I felt it important for AOI to testify separately today just to vividly bring to your mind commercial customers in a separate forum. Commercial customers that we work with through AOI, through the Oregon Restaurant Association, a coalition I manage during the interim, support the A15 amendments, and primarily that issue of the cost of service rate, continuing a regulated rate so our members are not forced into the market. The rules accommodated that when we were implementing 1149, but to have it in statute, I think, brings additional comfort to our members, and we appreciate
okay.
that.
Thank you very much, Julie. Appreciate
and
it.
And the A16th, we do not support as they add uncertainty.
The A15s, okay. Any questions for Julie? Nothing for Louise, too. Okay. No one else? Is there anyone else who wants to testify on this bill? I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3633A in gross. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3633A in gross.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzger.
I move the dash A15 amendments to A engrossed House Bill 3633.
Senator Metzger moves the A dash 15 amendments to House Bill 3633. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Metzger.
I think it's been very good for the committee to hear the comments today, and it is, I think it's especially important that we do address this very complex issue as carefully as possible. I think there's a lot of concern in the community. Unfortunately, we haven't heard a lot of it today, and that's, but I think we all know where those concerns are, and that is that we give due diligence to an issue of providing a stable market environment, a productive market environment, and keeping costs down. The fact of the matter is that rates are going up for a variety of reasons, and in reality, for the average citizen out there, that's a tax. It's a tax on their income that they cannot recover. And so in looking at 1149, which we implemented 2 years ago, the changes in the marketplace and looking at what we can do, I commend the group we've been working with to try and find some fine-tuning to 1149 to provide some stability to that market and also comfort to the ratepayers. There's three things I think are critical, and I think it came out in the testimony today, and why, Mr. Chairman, I've moved the dash 15 amendments. It is critical that we have an adequate supply of energy. It's critical that we encourage that adequate supply of energy and not do anything to derail that. I think we all know in the supply-demand world that we need to have the supply to meet the demand in order to keep costs at a reasonable level. I think it's also important with the amendments and with House Bill 3633, as it would be engrossed, would be letting the marketplace know and residential customers and small business owners that cost of service is going to be extended, and the PUC will be extending that indefinitely, certainly for residential customers, but also have some options for providing that marketplace. The only thing I would say, and I think Mr. Gallagher pointed it out a few moments ago about the importance of bringing new supply online and energy facilities in Oregon, I would just simply hope, and we can have this discussion as we move on, that Oregon does not become a energy farm for other areas, that we do provide supply for the grid of the Northwest and the state of Oregon. And as we look for these facilities, Mr. Gallagher pointed out about the jobs that would be created, is making sure that those jobs go to the very skilled Oregonians that we have in this state in constructing those plants and providing those services. I think in combination with what we did a few days ago on the floor of the Senate, in taking out the divestiture encouragement for utilities, now with putting supply in, providing certainty to the market, keeping the very important low-income assistance online for October 1st, and yet recognizing the fairness issue of the public purposes, separate and distinct at the time that access is presented, I think is a good package. I think it protects Oregonian consumers. It's good for business. It's stable for the market. And I would encourage the committee to unanimously support that dash 15.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Misrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize. I had to step out for a second, but did we have an indication from the governor's office of what his preference is?
I can't say, Senator Meserly, as to a preference from the governor. I can guess what his preference would be. I think my indication from the governor's office that he believes that the work of the committee will be satisfactory to him. I can only give you my own indication that he would prefer the dash 15s as well.
Any other questions from members of the committee? Okay. Senator Metzger has moved the dash 15 amendments. No other discussion? Any objection? The dash 15 amendments are adopted. Senator Metzger.
Mr. Chairman, I move House Bill 3633 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Metzger moves the House Bill 3633 as amended, be sent to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator
I
Carter.
I have no well, maybe I would just ask to be on. No discussion.
No discussion. Is there any objection to the bill? Hearing no objection, House Bill 3633 as amended will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Metzger.
Be happy to
carried the bill. He's been working on the amendments, so we will pass it on.
Chairman, I just want to make a statement.
Yes.
I just want to commend the people that have worked on this issue, because people really did want to be able to support a bill coming from this legislative, the 71st legislature, and also to give a special recognition to Senator Beyer, Senator you know who I'm talking about, Senator Metzger. On the Senate side, but certainly giving kudos to the House and also to the investor-owned utilities that have worked this bill out. And so kudos to all of you that have worked hard on getting this legislation to come to the Senate floor.
Well, thank you, Senator. I think we all recognize that we're kind of in unplowed grounds in many cases where we're speculating what's going to happen, what might not happen. I'm going to personally have a tape made of this hearing, and I'm going to look back in 10 years from now and see, do we make some good decisions here at this particular time? And, of course, we're going to leave it in the hands of the PUC to do the follow-up work at this particular point. And certainly the Legislative Assembly is on call if needed at any time. I thank the committee for its good work and diligence, and hearing that, I'm going to adjourn the committee and thank you all for coming today.
And we have a 3 o'clock meeting.
Oh.
Yeah.